everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Triple Hop Session Series. My name's Charlie. You can find me on Instagram at Charlie Ayling and at Craft Can Gang. Unfortunately, we couldn't be joined by our other normal co-host, Ryan, today. He couldn't make this particular recording. But what I do have is a very special guest imported all the way from, I think it's the United States of Canada. Am I saying that right, Finn?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Do you want to tell everyone who you are?
Yeah, my name's Finn. My Instagram handle is The Beer Experience. And yeah, I come from Canada.
Brilliant. Great intro. And that is almost a seamless segue into this episode, which is another one of our kind of community showcase craft beer journey episodes, where Finn is going to tell us all about how we got into this weird niche hobby that we all share and listen to podcasts about nowadays. So, first question, Finn, where did it start? What was your first, like, identifiably craft beer experience?
Yeah, so I've got a couple, but I think I started kind of thinking more about beer after a trip to Belgium that I took in 2014. And ever since then, I kind of knew that beer was a bit different than I had perceived it before that. Mm-hmm. I think my big aha moment would have been, I was at a local pub and they had a IPA on. And I think at that point, I had only just kind of known what an IPA was, or at least heard of it and thought that I knew what it was. And it was a Buxton Nth Cloud double IPA. And I bought it and the bartender said something along the lines of, like, are you sure you want a pint of this? Cause it's like going to be 9 pounds. And I, you know, kind of pulled my trousers up and said, yeah, of course I want this. I knew it was going to be 9 pounds, of course.
Yeah, then turned around and winced.
Yeah, I know exactly what I'm doing. Anyway, it blew me away. I didn't know what a double IPA was. That I didn't even know that a double IPA even existed. But I remember having that and immediately my life kind of changed. And I realized that beer could be so much more than just what I had been using it for as just like a vehicle to, you know, get a little bit of a
vehicle to oblivion, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's probably one of the identifiable gateway beers for me, like a singular incident that kind of changed my whole perspective.
So did your journey start in the UK then? You didn't get into it before you moved across here. Like what sort of year are we talking?
Yeah, so I moved to the UK in 2013. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, beer was just another version of alcohol that sometimes I would drink. Sometimes I would drink rum and cokes or whatever it was at the time. And definitely a huge factor for me was this idea of what cask ale was. And I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in Canada, only since learning about it and going back and searching it out, do I know a couple places that will do it, kind of like traditional pubs, but for the most part, it doesn't exist. So to see this kind of these hand pulls and people and being able to go to a pub and try all these different beers of things that you'd never heard of, that's kind of, that interested me a lot. So I'd walk into different pubs and especially when I was first over, I mean, the cask ale is generally cheaper. So I was trying lots of different styles of cask ale. And that was definitely the first time that I remember thinking about having an interest in trying a lot of different beers and seeing what they tasted like and learning about them. And, you know, I think from there, it only just grew.
Yeah. And that Buxton one was when it clicked for you.
Yeah, definitely. That was a huge moment. You know, I think even before that, you know, you see craft beer a lot in like, the, you know, 2014, 2015, you think, what even is that? You know, is that just a buzzword that people are using these days? But that's when I definitely started like looking out for different beers. And I think it was game over when I started an Instagram account and then all of a sudden everything went downhill from there.
Yeah, that's an excuse at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like once you get an Instagram account and you start seeing everything that's out there, you get this, you know, this desire to have everything. And, you know, I think for a lot of people that opens up a huge door into what the possibilities are.
Yeah, and you know, that's when you get into the community as well. And you know, say what you will about some of the recent community behavior, pre-pandemic, the community was one of the best things about it, in my view.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, the people that you meet, and, you know, it makes events like so much more exciting than just going and drinking beer. But like, you know, we saw each other at Friends and Family, and it just changes the whole dynamic of all of these beer events.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we kind of go back to when you started your Instagram, how long ago did you start that?
I just checked the other day, actually. I started it in like April or May 2017.
Okay.
And when I first started, I thought I was the only person in the world that had come up with this idea.
Right.
That I was going to expose people. I was going to travel to different countries and I was going to tell them all these great beers and teach people about this. Little did I know, I was, you know, not only not the first person to do it, but also not knowledgeable enough in the slightest, nor am I now, to really be, you know, exposing people to different styles of beer that, you know, I barely knew what anything was myself. But it did help me learn a lot, I think. And I got to learn about other breweries and see other people, what they were drinking, and especially like bottle shops and different places that I could buy beer myself, because at that point, I didn't really know where I was going to get any of my beer from. I think, as I said before, that was like the thing that changed everything for me, is seeing what there was and talking to people and just shooting someone a DM and asking where they got that beer. And I think then, it wasn't that long ago, but I think it was a bit more difficult to find some of the things that you wanted. It was difficult to buy direct from breweries. It was, you know, didn't happen at all.
I think it was a totally different landscape in 2017. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my friend had told me about Cloudwater and the V series, and I was like, okay, I want this, but where do I get this from?
Yeah.
And I remember there was this now defunct bottle shop in Southwest London called the Beer Boutique, and they had managed to get some. And he was like, man, they got the V12. Like, I'm gonna get some for us. And it was like this crazy idea that he was able to get that, because other than that, I had no idea myself.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got into craft beer, you've had your aha moment, you've started seeking it out. What was your first trip back to Canada like after that?
That's a good question. Because obviously going back to Canada, I didn't really know what the craft beer landscape was. Mm-hmm. And even still, people will message me and say, hey, like, I'm going to go to this place in Vancouver or this place in Montreal. Like, what's the beer like there? And other than just kind of because I have an interest in it, I don't have great firsthand experience. So going back was definitely like as much of an exploration for me as it would have been for like a tourist. You know, I knew about some of the big breweries in Toronto, like Bellwoods and like Collective Arts down in Hamilton. And yeah. I'm lucky enough that my city that I'm from has a decent little beer scene in it. So kind of lesser known breweries are starting to make a name for themselves there. But we have a different bottle shop sort of system there, where you go to the LCBO and just, that's the only distributor of alcohol that is in the entire province. Mm-hmm. So you walk in and you just kind of like pick things off, and it comes from breweries from all over the province. So, you know, it was just kind of an exploration for me as well, grabbing different things and seeing what was good, and, you know, bringing some back for some friends here to share with them.
Yeah. Have you noticed any differences in the scene over there and the scene here?
Yeah. I mean, I could talk for a long time about the differences in drinking culture in general between the UK and Canada. I find that, like, especially now, there's in the UK, there's such this like hop forward focus for everything. Yeah. Everything's hoppy, everything's yellow, everything's high ABV, at least right the trend right now.
Yeah.
In Canada, I think you just get a wider range of styles, which I think also is in the UK, but just again, you go like sours were kicked off in Canada like a good 3 or 4 years ago, whereas I think now they're only starting to gain a little bit of traction here.
Yeah.
And a lot of like low ABV beers, You don't get a lot of like massive imperial stouts. I mean, they you get them, of course, but
They're not every week.
no. And I think by virtue of the fact that you go to the LCBO, the liquor store, to buy your beer, a lot of it is kind of designed for kind of the masses in at large. So you don't have these specialty bottle shops where you or I would walk in and
Yeah.
be happy to spend like, $13 on like one beer because we know it's really good. So you can still get that stuff directly through breweries, obviously, but it's less common in the liquor stores in Ontario.
Yeah, is it like that because there are funky beer laws like there are in some US states? You know, you can't distribute in a certain way, or you can't consume, or you can't sell to go, or anything like that. Is it one of those weird legislative things?
Yeah, so Ontario basically has, it's only changed recently, but you could only, you used to only be able to purchase from the LCBO, which is the Liquor Control Board of Ontario, or it's called the beer store, literally called the beer store. And that's where you would buy your big, like, your big 2-4s, your 24 packs of beer, your 12 packs of beer, like when you're in university and whatever it is, right? Like, Labatt's or Heineken or whatever. And now you can buy some alcohol in grocery stores. You can buy beer and wine, but you can't buy it at like a corner store. You can't buy it from anywhere else that's not regulated, like those three places are. So, and just in general, you can't drink in public like at all. Like I got a ticket in university once because I was, I got a $125 ticket for drinking beer on the sidewalk at a party. You can't do that. So everything's a bit more not as relaxed there as it is here.
That's really interesting. So you've mentioned a few UK breweries so far that featured in your craft beer journey. Like we've got Buxton, you've got Cloudwater. If you think back to when you were kind of accelerating into this hobby, who were the others that you used to seek out? And, you know, are they the same breweries that you seek out now?
I think a big one for me, I remember being really excited for Humuloid. It was Beavertown's double IPA, the double IPA version of Lupuloid. And I think they rebrewed it again. And it wasn't as good, but I remember the first time being super pumped. And I think that was back in 2017. So they are ones that I was always on the lookout for. And just like their branding and stuff, like when you're first getting into it, that just like screams craft beer to you, right? So they were pretty big. I think at that point I was getting into Northern Monk a lot. Just like Eternal, their Patrons Project series, like they were collabing with Other Half and stuff way back then. It was before I even knew who Other Half was. They did like Imperial Stout collab with Other Half, I think, around then as well. And it's just, looking back at some of the pictures early on in my Instagram journey, I don't even know who these people were at the time. I'd be so excited to get those beers now, but then it just kind of completely flew over my head. So they were definitely big. And I think as well, like, because I've been living in Southeast London for all that time. I think I live really close to the Meantime Tap Room. I think they sold out in 2015, but before that, like Meantime was, it just felt so cool to be drinking a beer that was brewed like in Greenwich and it made me feel like a bit more like of a local that I was drinking Meantime, but I won't touch the stuff now really. But I think those would be the big ones. And I hadn't even heard of the likes of like Daya and Verdant, even though I know they were doing things at that point in time. I think they were a little bit after the fact.
Yeah, I don't think I had my first day until 2019, which is kind of mad when I think about it now. That's really not that long ago, but I found it. Well, I'd heard about it, but this was at the stage where you couldn't buy day in most bottle shops. Like it was really hard to get anywhere from directly from day. And I wasn't like into it to the extent where I thought I'm going to go and spend X amount ordering direct from a brewery. Because you know it seemed like a massive risk at the time for whatever reason, and I found it on Keg in one of the craft beer co bars in London, and they just had Steady on. It's like okay, I get
That's
it,
awesome.
yeah,
Yeah,
completely understand it.
I think for a while they weren't canning. I think they held off on getting their canning line because they didn't want to do like remote canning, so they waited a little bit. I think I had my first day. They did a little tap takeover at the Tate Modern actually. The Tate does like a monthly tap takeover, or they used to, like a beer and art series, and they had a bunch of stuff on there, and I remember being really excited for that to finally get some. Because like you know, I didn't know where to get it, even though I was actively looking for it. You know, I wasn't going to make a trip to Cheltenham quite yet. I mean, I have done since, because obviously my hobby has jumped off the deep end now. But yeah, that was and it, now that you get to get them so easily, it's hard to remember those times.
So, like early on, or even moving a bit later on in your journey into beer, were there any people that played like a really important role in dragging you deeper into that?
Yeah, so I have a friend who is Australian, who's back in Australia now, but he lived in Putney, and he was the one who told me about the beer boutique. It was always like, oh, Finn, you got to come out. You got to come to this place. It's amazing. And I remember going there in 2017 and you know, just being blown away by it. They got a couple taps and just a great beer selection. But other than that, you know, I think it was mostly kind of on my own volition. I think the first person I met from Instagram was Ed, just a Swift one. We met at a BrewDog probably in like 2018. He traded me like a heady topper for like a bunch of Canadian beers. And he's a good friend of mine now. We meet each other regularly for a beer when we can.
Yeah, well, that's who I met you with at the experiment for the Verdant Other Half collab launch, if you remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I do remember that. We had been for a few before, and then that was the start of a long night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But him, he was one of the first I met, I think, earlier on. I think Jay Crawley was the guy I did my first ever beer trade with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I traded a bunch of Canadian beers, and he gave me some of the Buxton Omni Polo ice cream series, like in those bottles. So that was ages ago as well. But I think he was the first person I properly traded beer with, and then since then I've kind of swapped cans. I think that's how me and you got talking way back when.
Yeah, because you were my second trade. I seem to remember I traded some Finn back for some other half that you bought back from a trip over there.
Yeah, fresh from New York.
They were great beers.
Yeah, definitely.
You did me a solid there.
You know, I mean, when you come back, you can't trade a lot, but you can trade a little bit. So, you know, if you can get some. I actually didn't get a chance to go out to Finback that trip, so I'm happy to get some from you.
So you've been to New York, and I'd love to delve a little bit more into that. But along, you know, the first few years of getting into this, are there any other really memorable beer moments for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I think going to the Beer Mile, the Bermondsey Beer Mile was big. I'd heard about it, and it was just more about trying to convince some friends to tag along because I didn't know what it was really. I knew it existed, and finally getting a few friends to come by, and that was when, you know, Four Pure were still doing pretty good stuff. They were still, you know, pretty revolutionary at the time, and you know, this is before Cloudwater, obviously, and back when the beer boutique in Bermondsey was still open, which it's not, sadly. But doing the beer mile for the first time was pretty amazing. I was lucky enough to go to Denmark in 2000 and must have been 2017, and going to Copenhagen and doing all like the Mikkeller bars and Tuol and doing some places like that was.
Did you do War Pigs as well?
War Pigs was like the first place I went to. You know, phenomenal place, and one of those places that you just kind of you think back and you think, oh man, I want to be there right now. But you know, hopefully soon enough.
Yeah, we had Copenhagen booked for last April, and obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, the event took place instead.
No. The pandemic, which shall not be named.
Yeah, that's, I think there's a lot of people who've had to shelf a lot of really exciting plans. I think because craft beer has taken off so much in the past couple of years, and people are starting to realize where they can go and what they can experience. And people had a lot of stuff lined up. I think that unfortunately, no more.
So when you went to, you must have gone to New York in 2019 then,
Yeah.
I think. If my calculations are right, like kind of mid to late 2019.
Yeah, August.
So how excited were you for that, and kind of what were the highlights of that trip for you?
Yeah, so I was, it worked out nicely because I went to Canada, and then on the way back from Toronto, I just stopped off in New York for a week. And I originally wanted to go by myself, because I wanted to just do beer, you know, and just kind of do beery stuff. And my girlfriend was like, "Well, I'll come with you." And I was like, "Well, yeah, but I just kind of want to do lots of beer stuff." And you know, luckily she's great and she loves beer as well. And you know, she'll happily, you know, tag along for that sort of stuff. And finally, she kind of said, "Well, you know, I can probably bring back a couple extra beers for you." Aha.
Click.
Yes. Yeah, please come, please come. So yeah, I spent a week there and just kind of did everything that I'd been putting on a list for a while. So like as is, Blind Tiger, Threes, Other Half, Strong Rope. I didn't get out to KCBC or Finback, unfortunately, but then did Grimm, Interborough, and just kind of drank my way through like every single place that I could, not spending too long at each, but just long enough to get a sense for it, try a couple beers, and then obviously a few touristy sightseeing bits as well, because you have to. But yeah, fantastic, fantastic week.
Are there any other beer destinations you've been to? Like, are there any that are a bit off the beaten track, or have you mainly been to ones that are fairly well known for it?
I would say I was really surprised with I went to Krakow in Poland.
Poland, yeah.
Fantastic city all by itself, but the beer there was also really, really good. And
Yeah.
we found a couple really cool local places, super nice, super cheap, really, really great beer. That was really surprising. So definitely there. Off the top of my head, I think most of the places I've been have been kind of just normal places that you would go, and then I might search out the odd craft beer spot there, but not really any specific trip just for the beer.
Yeah, I'm a bit guilty of that. You know, we used to go to Belgium just for it. Like I imagine your first trip to Belgium, mine was a bit eye-opening.
Yeah, so that was actually, I would love to go back because I've only been, again, in that first trip when I first came to the UK, but that was actually the first beer I ever chased. I'd heard about this Westvleteren 12, and I knew that it was a, you know, the best beer in the world. And every pub we went to or beer cafe, I kept asking them if they had it, and they kind of like laughed at me and said, "No, sorry, mate." And then finally, the last day, the last place we went to, I just kind of like just cast a line out and said, "Hey, you don't happen to have this?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I think I do." And he came back and said, "I've got seven." And there were seven of us, and I was like, "We'll buy them all." And that was the first time that I like chased a beer and was rewarded. And I think, yeah, I would love to go back and just, you know, with knowing what I know now and with the experience and with the bit more knowledge and appreciation that I have now, to just do that all over again.
I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but the two times we went to Belgium, I was definitely well into beer by that point, but I hated Lambic. Couldn't get my head around it at all. And like we'd be in bars and we'd see like Cantillon, Rosé de Gambrinus, or Fofun on tap, and I'd be like, no, fuck that. Like, have you got anything
Yeah.
hot in, please? And
Yeah.
it's just so demoralizing when I look back at like the photos and see like I could have had like bottles of that stuff. Just
Oh,
incredible stuff, but I just couldn't get my head around it.
I think Tony Grizzly Beers has got a great story. I think it was in Denmark, but he was at some bar and there was like a tap list that was like, you know, must have been 30 different beers and like lambics and, you know, Mikeller and Tool and all these amazing, beers. And I think he ended up getting a pint of Partisan.
Excellent.
And he's got a picture of his pint held up against this tap list. And like, he looks back now, he was telling me a while ago, and like, it's just hilarious to think what we missed out on just because we just ignorant, had no idea.
One of the most demoralizing experiences of my whole beer journey so far was about 3 weeks ago. I decided to look back at the beer list for the Beavertown Extravaganza that the year that I went to. And I was, when I was there, I just remember being really excited for like Cloudwater, whatever BrewDog had, and Sierra Nevada. And I looked back at the list and it was like Other Half, Jay Wakefield, Side Project. It was like, I just didn't care, wasn't interested. Just, you know, have you got Hazy Jane, please? Over at the BrewDog stand.
Yeah, it's missed out on a lot of things, but hey, you live and learn, and
yeah, opportunities. That's what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. That still happens though. I think sometimes you go the other way. Like, I remember at like friends and family, the queues for, you know, Monkish and Other Half and all the big names. But then you've got like other breweries that are doing amazing stuff, and people just put the blinders on and they go for the big boys straight away.
Like Green Cheek and Highland Park, not a person in the queue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even Finback. I think Finback had the beer of the weekend for me with Bird God.
Yeah,
fantastic. And you know, you go up there and get as many pours as you want. So it goes both ways, I think.
Yeah,
we get kind of so focused on just a few things that you miss out on the rest of the good.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So when all of this craziness starts to feel a bit more normal, and you know, we're recording this a day after they've extended regulations by 4 weeks. So, you know, I think we can, I'm hoping this episode ages poorly and they release it, but it is what it is. What's the first thing you're going to do that you can't currently?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be a bit personal, and obviously I haven't been back home in Canada for it'll be 2 years Christmas, which I'm hoping, I don't think I'll get back for the summer. So definitely go back there, drink some beers in Canada, see family.
Nice.
But in terms of like a beer trip, I think the next one that I really would like to do, and it would take a bit of planning, but I've got an uncle who lives in Oceanside, California. So to kind of use him strategically to kind of do a West Coast trip. California is kind of I think the next big trip that I'd love to do.
Yeah, it does sound ace. It's another place I'd love to visit. Like New York is probably first on my list US wise, but that's only because that was another one that we had booked that the pandemic cancelled. So I'm just kind of making up for lost time on those.
You've been hammered with that then.
Oh yeah, we had three cancelled.
Oh no.
But such is life.
Yeah.
So we're kind of coming up on the half an hour mark. We want to be respectful of your time and want to keep these episodes nice and snappy. So we're going to move on to some quick fire questions. So we've got five questions. Some of these have been topics of previous episodes. Some of these will be topics of future episodes. But first up, what is the beer you'd give someone to change their perspective on beer? What is your game changer?
So I think I'd have to go something reasonably sessionable, but not too much. You know what? For me, I think it'd be Sharks by Verdant.
It's the best.
I think it pushes people out of their comfort zone a bit. They look at 6.5 and go, ooh, that's a bit much.
Yeah.
Without going into like DIPA territory.
Yeah.
And it's just so good. You know, and a good batch of Sharks like can't be beat, you know.
It's outrageous. It's outrageously good. I had one at the weekend and I was like, if beer is better than this, I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just, it has all the great things about beer and none of the bad things about beer in terms of taste. I mean, obviously you still get hungover if you drink too much of it. But other than that, I think, yeah, that would be it for sure.
Perfect. Next one. What is your least favorite adjunct?
It's got to be like really peaty, smoky, flavors. I've tried to like peated whiskeys. I love a Scotch, you know, but that Laphroaig stuff and the Lagavulin just blows my face off.
Can't be doing it.
No. So if it's in a stout, No, thank you.
Right. Favorite hop or hop combination?
Well, I always like to think that I have a niche favorite hop, or one that's kind of trendy or cool. But every time I have a beer that's all Citra, I realize this is the best hop.
Yeah.
I know it's lame and I know it's boring, but like, I used to think, oh man, no, definitely it's Mosaic, or, oh no, you know, this Nelson batch has been so good. But then I have like something like I played trumpet on that tune the other day. Oh man, like,
yeah,
all Citra for me is just the way to do it. I think that's the king for me.
I think we're similar to that. I resisted it for so long. So I was like, yeah. You know, like when your favorite band sells out, I felt like that about Citra for ages. And then I think it was Fruit Car or something I had. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You can't hold back the tide.
No, I know it's so basic, right? Like, basic Haze Bro, love Citra. Like, yeah. I don't care.
Yep. Guilty.
Yeah.
Okay. Day drinking versus night drinking.
Yeah, it's got to be day drinking. You can night drink throughout the year, but you can't day drink throughout the year. You know, these UK winters can be super crummy. So having like day drinking in the sun when the weather's perfect, like, it beats. I love a night, you know, pub crawl, but day drinking for sure.
Yeah. And finally, who do you think is the most underrated UK brewery?
I'll have to go local with that. I think Howling Hops is doing some amazing stuff, and I don't think they must not get too far out of London, but they do some amazing IPAs and pale ales, and they did like an all Citra Dipa like a couple weeks ago that just was so good, and I don't see enough people drinking their stuff and talking about them. So I think for me, based on what I see, I have to go with Howling Hops, and their range as well. They do lots of different styles and stuff, so for sure that's what I think I'd go for.
I remember they had one out last year and the name's escaping me right now. I'm frantically trying to look for it. I think that was it. Lost in Control, the Pressure Drop collab
with a bit of Sabro in there as well.
Yeah, people were nuts for it.
Yeah, that was one of my beers of lockdown. It was around like maybe April or May of last year. Really good.
I do need to drink more of their stuff. I've never had one that I wasn't impressed with. And by that token, I can't understand why I don't buy more of it.
Yeah, and they're well-priced too. Like, they're not often that you're going to see one that's going to kind of have that sticker shock of some of the other beers you've got out there. So, yeah, I think underrated would be a good word to describe them.
Brilliant. Well, that kind of brings us to a close. Finn, thank you so much. You've been a great guest. Do you just want to tell people one more time where they can find you?
Yeah. So Instagram is the beer experience with underscores. And yeah, I've been happy to be here and join you. And obviously, unfortunately, Ryan couldn't be here as well, but I'm sure I'll catch up with him soon enough.
Sure. And we'll be back with another episode very soon, hopefully in the presence of the great and powerful, the bearded beer bloke. But until then, everyone, thank you for listening and take care.
Cheers, guys.